Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Energy Policy Committee to order. We are going to start with a discussion about the short-term and long-term issues related to the propane price increase and shortage. And we have a few different people to share some information. We are really lucky today to have Roger Leiter from the Minnesota Propane Association to share with us some information. Representative Garofalo and I were present at a meeting. He was present in person. I was present on the phone with Governor Dayton and the Minnesota Propane Association. I think that was January 27th. And the association did a very good job of laying out for Governor Dayton all of the different causes that they believe contributed to the price spike and the shortage. And we would love for you to share that information with the committee. So welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Madam Chairman, committee members, I'm Roger Leiter. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Propane Association, and I'm very proud to be here and representing the propane industry. As everyone knows, it's been plainly laid out in the news and every place else, the propane industry has gone through a very exciting year and a very tough year. But this isn't just a Minnesota issue. What we're going through right now is really a historic national propane event. I've been in this industry for 41 years, and I have not seen ever anything like this. As a matter of fact, in the 102-year history of the industry, we haven't seen something like this. Kind of to run through how we got where we're at, and everybody's heard it on the news, but I'll just run through a few brief facts what we went through. You know, we began last year with a very cold, wet spring in 2013. As many of you probably remember, northern Minnesota, the fishing opener couldn't happen because there was still ice on the lakes. Many farmers and people that normally plant crops at that time had to delay that for a long period of time. That cold, wet spring delayed that planting and also pushed us through a partially hot, dry summer at times, and it led us into a fall. In October, we had one of the wettest falls in the Minnesota in many years, and it was very cold, delaying harvest until the last weeks of October. At the last weeks of October, harvest began with a record corn crop that was very wet, not just here in Minnesota, but from the Ohio Valley all the way through the Dakotas. All of this caused for millions and millions of gallons. They're estimating that it was 385 additional million gallons that were used for propane for crop drying that hadn't been used before in prior years. This put a big stress on our system. We immediately followed that shortly after we had the meeting with Governor Dayton and moved into winter, which still hasn't quit. Yesterday morning it was 31 below in northern Minnesota, and it was as cold as 8 degrees in northern Texas. So this has been a winter that has been stretched out through the entire eastern two-thirds of the United States. There's been transportation declarations of exemption for drivers for propane in 39 states across the eastern part of the United States. We start to take a look at Minnesota. For Minnesota, in the recent months of October through January, we have delivered this year 175% of the product that we delivered each of the last 3 years. So kind of just give you a few little bit of numbers, that amounts to an additional 125 million gallons, 12,500 semi-loads, 37,500 delivery truck loads that go to homes, and we estimate that our drivers have delivered 370,000 more individual deliveries to farms, homes, and businesses, and that was through January. That doesn't include February at all. So it's been a very, very tough year for us in that regard. In January, because of the drawdown, because of the widespread draw of propane that across the country, the supply points, and ours in particular, are Canada and the Conway, Kansas Basin, were exceedingly low. They were 40% below their normal levels of supply and estimated that they would run out of supply by the 1st of March at that time. That type of estimate drove prices up high, sharply, and fast as people wanted to secure product for their marketers, for their members in certain areas. Fortunately, some actions taken by the government and the high price of propane itself helped reverse anything that happened there, and product began to flow into the Conway market. People used conservation measures. People that had alternatives to switch away from propane at that time, commercial accounts did. And the level of supply in Conway has leveled off. We're getting closer to, it's still below normal, but it's much better than it was at that time. And with that, the price has also dropped. It was strictly a function of supply and price that we went through. Our marketers, like I say, have done a fantastic job, and I'm very, very proud of what the propane drivers have done. I'm starting to hear stories that they're pretty worn out. Right now, those folks have been traveling in cold weather every day. They're walking out to propane tanks, usually in waist-deep snow, delivering up to 30 deliveries a day. And those folks have done a tremendous job. I'm proud of the customer service reps that answer the phones, schedule those deliveries, and deal with all the credit issues that have to be dealt with, as people have had struggles this year to pay some of their bills. I'm proud of the managers who have went wherever they've had to get supply. We've got supply from Kansas, of course, and Conway area, many trucks going to Iowa, and trucks going as far as Mont Belvieu, Texas, to make sure that people in Minnesota had supply. And through all of that, we had supply shortages. But no place at any time did any of our marketers say, I do not have product, I cannot deliver. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't inexpensive, but these people did what they had to do to get it done. We start to look at at those types of things, and we can understand why it's been a very, very tough winter for everyone involved. And there's something that we really don't want to go through. So we start to talk a little bit about future supply, and this is a national issue. The National Propane Gas Association has called for investigations into why the price spiked so high in Conway, Kansas area, and what they can do about it. They're taking a look at, you know, this last year we had 1.3 billion more gallons of production of propane in the United States, but we had 1.7 billion gallons of more exports from the United States. So we exported even more than we had before. Even with all those exports, we had enough propane in the United States to fill the needs. It just wasn't in the right place at the right time. They're looking into that and seeing what they can do to set triggers, find ways to ensure that we have enough product to maintain in the United States. The propane production, if people are worried about that and think about that, propane production in the United States is expected to double between now and the year 2525. At that point, we will have more than double the amount of propane we need for our citizens available, and exports will be an important part of moving that product. So we want to take a look at how we can do things to make sure that it's going to be better in the future. One of them is we take a look at what our marketers are doing. Our marketers are building storage so that they have more supply on hand, so that when there is a short-term pipeline or trucking or rail shortage, they're going to be able to handle that. They're building more facilities to accept product by rail. They're looking at ways to build storage at their customer levels. They're offering more programs to their customers for budget pay plans, pre-buy programs, pre-purchase programs, and things of that nature so that we can reduce the impact that propane consumers will have. Minnesota Marketers will going to develop do more work to develop year-round propane usage. It may sound funny, but selling more propane is part of our answer, and that is auto gas, lawnmowers, engine fuel, irrigation engines, things that would use propane during the summertime will help build infrastructure and level out the summer to winter ratios and issues that we have. That will help us. Minnesota Marketers are investing again in added storage and infrastructure, and especially those rail terminals. We get asked about what can customers do, and our customers, we get calls at our office at the association level all the time. We ask customers to, and encourage them to take advantage of the marketer programs that are available. Virtually every marketer in the state has a pre-buy program, a budget pay program, a pre-purchase, or a cap pricing program. Over this last winter, I've talked to several of our marketers, and the estimate we've come up with is that over 40% of our customers that are out in the field today paid no more than $2 a gallon for propane all winter long. And those companies are still honoring those pre-buy contracts they made, even though they traveled to Texas to get the gas. So that's a great advantage for a propane customer to take to participate in. We encourage them to become on a scheduled delivery program. A lot of times people like to get on a program where they say, well, I'll call you when I need fuel. Well, everybody likes to call about the day before Thanksgiving and make sure they don't run out. That doesn't work too well in our industry. So we encourage scheduled delivery programs where we can level those things out. We encourage them to fill their propane storage or have it filled by their marketer during the summertime. Again, building summer gallons, and the price is usually lower in the summertime than it is in winter. We also encourage them to upgrade to more energy-efficient appliances. The association at this time has a water heater incentive program encouraging people to upgrade their water heater or to install new propane efficient water heaters. The last question or piece that I get is I'm asked from people, what can the state do? What can happen here? The best thing we can have is incentives that would help people put energy efficient appliances in their home. Incentives that would somehow help people weatherize their homes, make them tighter, more energy efficient. If we could have work through the state, the state officials, to work with the railroads to prioritize delivery of product of heating fuels in the wintertime. We struggled this year many times with rail deliveries, and I know and understand what they go through with the weather, the freezing cold, and the snow that we've had. But we're asking for some way to help prioritize and make that work. One of the other things that we would look forward to is to see if there's a way to, for our low-income people, to take advantage of the summer rates that are out there. And one of those things would be putting together a pre-purchase or a pre-funding program for LIHEAP, putting up to $15 million into LIHEAP in the month of August and September, so that the delivered fuels industry could get those products out there, fill those tanks in the summertime, and not in November as we hit the heating season and put a lot of stresses. With that, you know, we have a long history, and we have a lot of people that have done a lot of good things out in the marketplace, and we know we've heard a lot about high prices, but I think our marketers have done everything they can to get them down. They're coming down fast. And we want to look to the future. And I'm very proud to represent them here today. And Madam Chairman, I would entertain any questions from anybody.
Thank you. I just have a couple to start. I don't know if you testified at the hearing that Senator Franken had, but I'm assuming there's a couple of federal issues. The ones that you've raised here are with the LIHEAP program. I don't know if there's a way to get the funding any earlier. I mean, obviously we could do a state funding component in August or September, but I don't know if you've asked the federal government to take a look at the earlier dates. And then the second thing is the rail issue. The one thing that we know about railroad regulation in as state lawmakers is that everything we do pretty much is preempted by the feds. And so I don't know if there's been some action on the federal level on that topic, if you could share with us.
Madam Chairwoman, committee, we did have those conversations with Senator Franken. We're asking him the same thing, and if there's a possible way to pre-fund delivered fuels so that it can happen in the summertime for those states. That would mean an earlier release of funds from the national level to do that. And it moves glacially slow to make something like that happen, and those changes happen slowly. What we were thinking of is possibly if there's funds available within the state to borrow from for 3 months, to forward those funds into August and then pay them back in November when the funds come available. Something of that nature would allow that to allow us to make that go a lot further. A lot of times, like I said, the price of product is much less during the summertime than it is during the winter. This would allow that LIHEAP, the LIHEAP funds we have, to stretch further and maybe serve more people. And I think that would be very important. Also, I guess when we start to look at the railroads, and I don't mean to pick on them, but it's part of our infrastructure, and it's going to be a bigger part of our infrastructure in the future. As we talked to Senator Franken that day, we asked for an opportunity to sit down and for the railroads to tell us how we can do it differently. What do we need to do to ensure that it happens? Just recently, one of our marketers in Cambridge, Minnesota, mentioned to me that they have 11 rail cars that are sitting just over here in St. Paul. And they've been here for 9 days. They can go and look at them, but they can't seem to get them moved to Cambridge where they need them. And that's a difficult thing to go through. And, you know, those are pieces that we have to work on, and we have to figure out a way to make that happen if we're going to better sufficient in what we do.
I think the Move Minnesota Coalition would welcome your support of a comprehensive transportation infrastructure package. Questions from members. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm hoping the testifiers can answer a couple things. One, I'm hearing that, you know, from people who are doing the trucking and driving, that because of the long queues at terminals, they would have a day's worth of time behind the wheel burn up in queue, and that caused additional delays. Any comments about the issues driven by queues? And then I've also heard that because of a little bit of a boom in a state to the west of us, there is not due a new rail car for propane for some time. When, you know, what sort of delay for new capabilities rail-wise are you seeing?
Mr. Leader.
Chairman, Madam Chairman, and Representative Quam, as we look at the queues that you're talking about where people waiting in line, we have to give credit, a lot of credit due to the governor for his extending an hours of service exemption for our people. If they wouldn't have had that, a lot of times we would take it, they would have maybe got one load of product per day because they were waiting in line for 8 hours and driving for three. This allowed them to rest while they were in line, haul when they could haul, and do things. I don't know what the answer to that is. Warmer weather is always helpful, but that's part of why the industry is investing so much in infrastructure. The estimates that I came up with recently were that in the next year, $100 million is going to be invested in storage, railroad infrastructure, and other things in the state to put in more terminals, more places where people can stop and get product. We are losing a pipeline, and that's going to make a difference on what we do. That's going to have a big factor. But again, we are working and have been for the last 2 years to try to figure out how do we circumvent that. Rail is a big part of that, and that's why I wanted to bring that up at the very onset, is that we need to find a way to work through the rail portion of that. The rail car issues that you talked about, I know there was a unfortunate incident in North Dakota with oil deliveries. The oil cars that they have are different from the propane cars that we have. The propane cars that we have, if there's a derailment, they have double thick heads on each end, and they have crash barriers that protect the ends of the cars from that. Not to say that an accident couldn't happen, but it's very, very seldom that we ever have a propane spill from rail or from any of our DOT vessels that we have out there. And I haven't heard of a redesign of propane cars. I know they are redesigning the oil cars and putting more of those in place, but for propane, I haven't heard that yet at this time.
Follow-up? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the testimony from the testifier. Two quick questions. Number one, how about the stocks at Mont Belvieu? Was there ever any depreciation of those, and where are those at right now?
Mr. Leader.
Chairwoman, Madam Chairwoman and Representative, the stocks, as I looked at the stocks from last week, they actually had an uptick in inventory. on a constant basis, processors in the Mont Belvieu or in the Conway area of Kansas and the Bushton area of Kansas are processing propane at all times and putting into there. And actually, we had an increase of storage level in Conway, Kansas last week. So the drawdown has really slowed down. We're not over, unfortunately, with winter yet. But we're getting the point in the next couple of weeks where production will keep up with demand. And we know that by the end of March that happens for sure. And so that we're hoping that that storage issue and that supply issue should go away.
Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
To the testifier, can you talk a little bit about the emergency FERC order and what was the status, what was done, and the prospects for seeing something like that happen in the future?
Madam Chairwoman and Representative, the FERC order, Federal Energy Regulatory Committee, who they oversee the pipelines that we have in the United States. One of the things that we have is that there was lots of product in Mont Belvieu, Texas, right on the coastal part of Texas. Most of our propane people that produce propane in the United States, if they believe they have extra product, they move it to the Mont Belvieu area of Texas. That allows them to move it to the East Coast through pipelines, to the West Coast through pipelines to Hobbs, New Mexico, or it allows them to ship it overseas if it's not needed here. So as we went into this year, if there was extra product, that's where the product was moved. Most all the pipelines that we have in our areas are designed to move from product from north to south. So by changing the FERC order, what they had to do is ask Enterprise Pipeline to change their shipping schedule. Someone who had already planned to ship another product on that pipeline had to be asked to wait. In order to break that contract, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission had to give permission to the pipeline operator, Enterprise Pipeline, to do that. And that took some time. But in doing that, they then operated, they reversed that line and moved nearly 500,000 barrels of propane, that's 20-some million gallons of propane north into the market. That helped desperately to relieve the pressure on the product supply and the pricing that we had at that time.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you. This is a fascinating discussion. I think there's going to be some more folks over the next couple of weeks going to have something to say about it. One is the discussion on LIHEAP funding and the rules and regulations surrounding that. Madam Chair and committee members, I'd submit there's an enormous amount of good we can do just by loosening rules and regulations surrounding that program to allow the pre-buying of propane, in this case, or fuel oil if they're in home heating with the fuel oil supplier, that I don't think we allow to do now. So there's some things we do that we're really fumbling the ball. Without investing any more money, we can lift rules and regulations and we can make the program work quite a bit more effectively and efficiently with the existing infrastructure. Speaking of infrastructure, Move On Minnesota is probably not going to be in a position to support this because it would entail building more freight rail lines, freight rail terminals, and pipelines if you really want to get down to solving this in the long term. I think we demonstrated over the last, 20 or 25 years, because back in my railroad days, we hauled quite a bit of propane to small-town Minnesota. Every co-op had a rail spur. Every co-op had a couple of propane cars shoved in there, and that happened on a regular basis. But I think the pipeline and truck combination was so cost-effective and drove the prices down that eventually the small-town railroads, the retail railroading we call it, got it out of the propane delivery business. And a lot of those cars either were retired or were switched over to hauling oil. I think we're going to have some folks from the Regional Railroad Association here in a few moments might have an interesting take on that, on how we might be able to do some things, not immediately, but over the next year or so, to maybe reinvigorate that infrastructure for not a lot of money again. So there's some things going on here that I think we can help with. But in the short term, the best thing I think we did was put $20 million of emergency money into LIHEAP. But I don't think any of us around this table or in this room are interested in using $20 million to buy $6 propane when perhaps we could use it in July and buy $1.50 propane. I'm really interested in that discussion, Madam Chair. I think we can probably find some common ground there.
I think so. I hope so. Any other questions from members? I just have one. I understand that the Cochin pipeline is going to shut down at the end of March or early April, and that the industry is known for a couple of years. So I assume that you've taken some steps to get ready for that pipeline shutting down, maybe increasing storage in the area. Do you want to share with us a little of what folks have done to get ready for the pipeline shutting down?
Madam Chairwoman and committee members, we are aware, and in Minnesota we have two propane terminals that are served from the Cochin pipeline, one in Benson, Minnesota, the other in Eagle Lake, right next to Mankato. The Benson, Minnesota terminal has been purchased by one of our propane suppliers, Alliance Energy. Their intent is that it's a million-gallon storage facility, that they are going to turn that into a rail facility. They're looking, they're working aggressively with the railroad to get a spur put in, to have that done and ready to go for fall. They wanted it by July. We're optimistically hoping by fall that everything can be taken care of. That is one of them. We do not know what is going to the disposition of the terminal at Eagle Lake, Minnesota. That is probably close to 750,000 gallons. It is close to the Enterprise pipeline, and there may be some things that can be done to tie into that pipeline and make that terminal still available to us. Beyond that, what people have done, people such as CHS have invested a large amount of money into expanding some of the rail facilities we have. Winter Propane and CHS have partnered in Rockville, Minnesota. They have recently doubled the amount of storage they have there, doubled their rail unloading capacity and their truck loading capacity. So they are doubling that capacity there. In Glenwood, Minnesota, CHS has added 750,000 gallons of storage, and they've also doing it in Hannaford, North Dakota, which will also help serve some of our people in northwest Minnesota. So they have invested a lot of money and time into making these facilities work. We know of three or four other people that are tentative to putting in extra facilities as well in areas such as Bemidji and other places in northern Minnesota. The other place that we have, the only place we have underground storage in the state of Minnesota is in Mentor, Minnesota, an underground cavern that they have up there. I believe it holds somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 million gallons, and that is owned by Solar Gas, or it's a Hess company. And they are also looking to, number one this year, add in rail facility and truck loading facilities to double their truck loading capacity. And in 2015, they plan to add 750,000 gallons of above ground storage and, again, more increased rail capacity. It is important in the fact that Hess also owns a fractionation facility where they split out propane from the other gases in Tioga, North Dakota, and so they would have ready access to product for the northwest corner of Minnesota for a long time. We think these things are going to go a long way. We don't think there's a silver bullet to solving the issue of having that pipeline go away and what we're going to do, but it's going to take a lot of little actions on many people. And part of that was what I mentioned before as well, as we look at priorities of having people do summer fills, getting as much gas sold in the summer as we possibly can, get it delivered into the tanks. The largest storage capacity we have in the state of Minnesota is customer tanks in the backyards of our homes and businesses, and that's what we need to get filled during the summertime.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today and hope that you will serve as a resource as we take a look at some steps we can take this session. Thank you very much, and I think next we're going to hear from the railroads. First, we're going to hear from Burlington Northern, and then we're going to hear from the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association. One of the topics that was brought up on the call was the issue of rail cars, and or the meeting that Representative Garofalo was at. And maybe you can clarify for us whether or not there are rail cars sitting around that we can use for propane, that we have any, if we have any ability as state legislators to get them moving. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Brian Sweeney, Regional AVP of State Government Affairs with BNSF Railway in St. Paul. To answer the first question about rail cars, we don't own the rail cars. Those are privately owned or owned by the customers or leasing companies. It's a pressurized car. It's a car that's also used for other commodities. From what I understand, at this time of year, it's also in high demand for shipping butane, which is used for the winter blends of gasoline. So that's one of the components looking down the road to replace the pipeline capacity is acquiring a sufficient supply of pressurized tank cars to handle this product. In the past several years, BNSF shipments of propane to Minnesota have ranged from a low of about 1,200 cars in 2012 to a high of 1,500 cars in 2011. Last year was almost in the middle at 1,300 cars. Top destinations have been Cambridge, Mentor, and Rockville. There's been some increase in propane shipments in recent weeks. Cambridge and Rockville, for example, took a more than double the amount of cars in 1 week as than they did the previous week. However, last week, the week ending March 1st, total shipments of propane to Minnesota on BNSF was only about 19 cars, the lowest since mid-January. So the demand is there in Minnesota for the propane, but shippers are not turning to rail in droves to ship the product here. They're by rail. Instead, they seem to be relying more on truck. Part of the problem, from what I understand, is that some of the normal supply points in Kansas, there just isn't the supply or the loading opportunity available. And so gas is being shipped by truck from other locations like Mississippi and so on. We have reached out to customers who produce and ship propane on our system and told them, there is a demand. Are there any problems? What can we do to expedite and position the cars? As was noted in Representative Hornstein's committee last week, this winter has been particularly tough on our service all across the northern tier. I've already sent a message inquiring about the 11 cars to see if that's us and what the situation is there. But we have tried to expedite the movement of propane cars. As I said, winter has just been particularly bad this year, and our system all across the northern tier, in the Dakotas, Montana, Minnesota, it has been suffering horribly. We are also currently working with customers on siting new facilities. I talked with our industrial development department this morning. They're in conversations with a number of people looking at several locations in Minnesota that construct or greatly expand the rail facilities for the unloading of propane. Each of these is a significant expense. We're talking $1 million plus to put in the switches, the track, and the facilities in order to do this. And to get that done in time for the autumn is going to be a challenge, of course. We're hopeful and confident that we can get a number of these projects done. I would think that one of the issues that may pop up might be some of the local permitting processes. I don't know if that has been a problem up to this point, but when there's a compressed time frame to get all this type of thing done, and with right now it looks like the prospect of a rather short construction season, that might be something that we need to keep an eye on. We have been also spending quite a bit of money on our infrastructure in Minnesota, both to improve, maintain, and expand our capacity for hauling freight. Each of the last 2 years, we've spent $100 million on our track and facilities in Minnesota. And our capital budget for this coming year is going to be larger, if anything. So we are, while we have had service issues, largely caused by the weather, we are trying to do our best to expedite and streamline the flow of propane into the state. As I said, there just has not been the huge surge in demand yet for rail transportation that one might anticipate. Thank you.
Questions from members? Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Appitz, I think you're up next. Your client's up next. Mr. Wagner, whose son is a fantastic swimmer.
As is yours.
We spent a lot of time at the Jackson swimming pool together watching kids compete. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mark Wagner, President, Twin Cities and Western Railroad and Minnesota Prairie Land Railroad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. A lot of what I have to say kind of echoes what Brian said. We're a short line railroad, and so as such, we too have been getting inquiries probably since about last August on various siting options for propane, because the folks then knew that the Cochin pipeline was going to go away, and propane is not looked on very kindly by some communities, and so we're very sensitive to community concerns. But recently, actually within the last month, we actually have I would almost call it a portable propane transload, wherein we're bringing propane out to Montevideo, and the gas company has a portable unit that they bring out, and it has all of the safety features in it, the static, electricity, all that stuff is there, and we're actually transloading propane in Montevideo today. I'm not comfortable with the liability provisions that we have with this firm. Basically, the term negligence comes to mind. It's on our property, and you know, we think once we get it there, it should be their problem, so we're still going back and forth with them on that. But in a broader sense, you know, we're a short line railroad. We have $75 million currently in liability insurance. I'm comfortable with our safety practices. However, if you get a garbage truck pulling in front of the train in the middle of a town somewhere, then bad things can happen. And so that I just bring that up as a concern. But we are a railroad. When somebody tenders product for us to haul, we are obligated under federal law to haul it. So we're doing our part to ease the propane shortage. Hopefully this move in Montevideo will become permanent, because I think that is a good region of the state that is underserved right now. And then also there's been some facilities being looked at on the Minnesota Prairie Line, at least the part east of Winthrop that's 25 mile an hour. We couldn't bring propane west of there because it's, or we could, but it would be in smaller car increments because of the track condition west of Winthrop. So, and I thought Brian's point about the permitting process is a very good point. Should these facilities come to pass, I don't know what kind of, I suspect in our rural area, you probably will have a balance between the needs of the farmers' need for propane versus, you know, where it's at, located relative to where the cities are. But that's something to keep an eye on as well. So that's what I have.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Beard and then Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wagner, welcome to the committee. Remind me that propane, I think, is placarded as a hazardous commodity, isn't it?
It is.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Wagner, I think that the FRA used to have a prohibition against moving hazardous commodity on what we call accepted track, some of which your Prairie Line track, I think, was accepted at one time, or maybe still is.
It was prior to the 2002 rehabilitation.
Good. Okay.
It's you can't move it on accepted track. On the 10-mile-an-hour track west of Winthrop, I think the limitation is five cars at a time.
Madam Chair, that's one thing that we have to keep in mind when we're looking at bonding bills, and we're asking for railroad money for the short lines, the 19 short lines and industrial railroads in the state. They've taken over some of the discarded track from the big guys and keeping small-town rail service going, and this is why it's really important. So even when you hear Republicans like me arguing for money in the bonding bill for that purpose, this is why. In some cases, they can't even move anhydrous ammonia or propane, in this case, on some of the track they had. So it's something I think that's probably good public policy that we consider in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony, Mr. Wagner. I think Mr. Sweeney maybe described that there's a different kind of car that's used for propane, if I heard that correctly. And do you also use the same type of cars? I know, again, it's not under your control. You have to, there's a lessee and
right,
all of that. But are you using, is it a double hauled or something of that nature to haul the propane?
Since it's a shipper supplied car, to the best of my knowledge, that would be correct. I think it was the folks from the Propane Association that described
Propane Association, correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the loader of the propane, I'm sure, would not use a substandard car.
Okay.
Representative Hornstein.
So, but to the best of your knowledge, but you don't know for sure if these companies are using this?
For sure, I would say 95% sure, but no, okay. I can't say 100% sure.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. That reminds me of a follow-up. Mr. Wigner, I just want to point out to the committee that your railroad is the one that runs on the old M and St. L line through Kenwood, where there's a little dust-up now about a light rail project or something that we've chatted about in the past. And so the propane that you haul comes up that track, which has been improved, if I'm understanding, so it's good solid track as you move propane and anhydrous ammonia and so on to the western part of the state, right?
That's correct.
And that's the only access you have, basically, to get your product to the western part of the state is to run through that part of town. And where I'm going with this, Madam Chair, is that there's been some amazing proposals to rebuild a flyover with a big S-curve and a sag in it and some other things and move them up another piece of track, which is currently accepted if it's even there.
Different and committee, Representative.
It is a different committee. Different but I just want committee. You to know, as we're talking about these things, I want you to understand that these things all tie together in different committees. So,
totally agree. I mean, I think it's good to bring up the fact of there's an intersection between energy policy and transportation policy here, and I think we do have some bipartisan agreement that there's a role for the state to play in making sure we have good rail transport in the state. I think it's a complicated question. As members of the transportation committees, we always talk about what's the right amount for the state to be kicking in, and this issue kind of brings to the fore of why there's a public service aspect to the rail service industry. Mr. Wagner.
Yeah, if I may, there was one thing. When you asked that question, what could the state do, one of the things in the Rail Service Improvement Act is, I believe, the state is prohibited from investing in rail cars particularly. Mm-hmm. I would suggest somebody look into that, but the reason I thought of that is I think eventually boxcars are going to become obsolete. And we were exploring about 5 years ago, was there a state program that could help our shippers that use boxcars to help? And I think there might be something that prohibits that because it goes across state lines.
All right. Any other energy-related questions from members? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate having you here today. The next person we have on our list is Matt Hughes from the Cooperative Network, and we have Craig Johnson after that. And then we'll go into the bills. Welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thanks for letting me come before you to testify today, primarily on House File 2539, which I know you won't be voting on today, but you'll be looking at, and to the propane situation in general. My name is Matt Hughes. I'm Minnesota Managing Director for Cooperative Network. We're a two-state trade association of cooperative businesses in Minnesota and Wisconsin of all types of cooperatives. And one of those types is in the propane business. And Minnesota, you should know, is also the number one cooperative state in the country, and our counterpart in Wisconsin is number two. We have been and continue to work with Representative Anderson in the House and Senator Coonan in the Senate on a bipartisan effort to encourage and incentivize the increase of propane infrastructure in Minnesota. As you know, crop drying demand and the extreme cold weather contributed to the propane shortage this year, as you've heard of already. Also, the stresses were compounded by the 3-week shutdown of the Cochin pipeline, and that is preparing for the eventual shutdown in April, as was also discussed. Cooperative Network, on behalf of its cooperative members, has been involved from the very beginning in the short-term and long-term efforts, including meetings with the governor that you referenced, Madam Chair. Senator Franken and other stakeholders and legislators and staff and the Dayton administration and congressional staff as well. We wrote a letter to the congressional delegation ahead of the request for assistance from the Obama administration about a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, and a request for the Dayton administration to engage with railroads as well. Finally, we've posted on our website for some time emergency resources for members and co-ops and end users. We've updated those pages, and they can be found at cooperativenetwork.coop, C-O-O-P, including conservation measures as well. Much has been done to address the situation, especially in the short term, and we're grateful to all involved for that, including the hours of service relief and the financial assistance to those in need as well. But this is a long-term situation as well. The Cochin Pipeline, as you know, will permanently cease on April 2014. This pipeline provides 40% of the propane used in Minnesota, cooperatives are working to assure that their customers will have a reliable source of propane into the future. Increasing storage at all stages of the supply chain will be necessary to offset the loss of the Cochin pipeline. This legislation is a step in the right direction. It encourages investment in infrastructure for storage of propane at the consumer level, and we intend to continue to work with Representative Anderson, Senator Coonan, and any others involved to help this effort. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you again.
Thanks, and we'll have members hold their questions till we get to the bill, and if you can stick around, we'll ask you when we're dealing with Representative Anderson's bill.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities and move to a slightly different angle on the propane issue, but just very briefly, just wanted to make the committee aware, Madam Chair, that we've had a handful of cities, not a great number, but very small communities in the state who heat their public buildings with propane, and due to the nature of the contract that they ended up with for their propane, got caught having to refill at very, very high costs. In many cases, the change in cost can be a major part of a very small community's budget for the year, as heating their public buildings is one of their major expenses. So we have a handful. It's literally about a half dozen communities that have responded to the league so far, saying that they are in trouble with their energy costs from this winter. We've brought that to the attention of the Department of Commerce. We'll be looking for some creative way to, you know, possibly help subsidize the added energy costs they've had to endure this winter. In some cases, it was a contract that just didn't last as long as they were hoping their fuel would last. In other cases, it was a case of just, you know, the added cold ran them out much quicker than they were anticipating. So we have a couple that got caught. And the scope of the problem, honestly, right now is probably less than $300,000 if to address everything we've heard about. So I think it's a manageable problem, but we did want to keep it on the radar of the committee so that you're aware there are some communities that actually are in some pretty significant financial straits trying to figure out how to keep those tanks filled and keep their public buildings open. In fact, we have one that has closed their public buildings for the most part, except for City Hall, to conserve the propane they have to keep City Hall open. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but it's not a widespread issue so far.
Thank you. Any questions from members? If you can let us know which communities they are, and we can maybe get a bill jacketed here.
I will provide that information, Madam Chair.
You may have heard we have tight deadlines.
Yes.
All right, next we're going to hear from Representative Anderson, House File 2539. This bill is a tax bill and was referred directly to the Tax Committee. And I shared with Representative Anderson on the floor that our tax chair, I think regularly in Tax Committee as well as in caucus, makes the point that it is her preference from the standpoint of tax policy that we fund things we care about directly through appropriations rather than through tax policy. And her advice, if Representative Anderson were to be having this hearing in her committee, would be introduce another bill where you straight up ask for money to be appropriated through the Department of Commerce or something. So those are the two choices we have when we want to incentivize behaviors: give money directly or give money indirectly through the tax code, but they both cost the same amount in the state budget. And our tax chair has some pretty strong views on this, so it's just important to keep that in mind going forward. Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thanks, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill and committee members. There is an amendment, the A1 amendment. Would we offer that now to get the bill in form, or do you want to wait till the tax committee?
Representative Anderson, we can't move your bill, and okay. We can't amend your bill because we don't have it. Representative Lincheski has it. But we can certainly talk about your amendment.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, I have tried looking in cushions and whatever, trying to get the actual funding. So far, I've come up empty, but that was before the budget forecast on Friday. So, anyway, this was something that we came up with to, in some way, incentivize the expansion of infrastructure in Minnesota. It's something I think we all agree on, that this problem, even when it warms up, is not going to go away. It's going to be back again. Next year, if we have a wet corn harvest again or a bitterly cold winter. So we need to do things to make this state better able to handle these high demands of propane. And I've been at some propane meetings, and it seems that the way propane is delivered here, the gallons they get in the fall and winter when we have high demand are somewhat based on the allocations they get in the spring and summer. So the idea is to even out these demand curves with propane
get more gallons in the country in the spring and summertime when the price is usually lower. And that would also give us a cushion in case we have these high demand periods. And it would just go a ways, at least, in helping us to curtail and to minimize some of the problems we had this past winter. I feel strongly that this shouldn't be a permanent exemption. That's why the amendment calls for just a two-year period, beginning of January through the end of 2015, to allow a short period of time where people can ramp up their propane storage. And I would it would be for residential people, for farmers with corn drying, and even the commercial facilities for putting up the big tanks to help us really expand our storage. And some of the base costs, I've talked about a typical 1,000-gallon tank that a lot of farmers would have or hooked up in series on turkey farms or hog farms. The cost of a tank, a 1,000-gallon tank, is about $2,000. You add your regulator and such, you're talking about $2,500. And some of the bigger farmers are talking about going to an 18,000-gallon size tank so they could take full transport loads and such. And the cost of a tank that size is approximately about $60,000. Then you have to put up with some concrete piers and such to handle a tank of that size. So the sales tax exemption would be a small way in helping people and businesses put up some bigger storage to help the state as we face some more of these supply problems down the road.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was mentioned earlier that the largest storage are these tanks around, and at that time I was curious about the possibility. There were people discussing farmers had storage in their tanks for drying that was left over. I assume that it's not legal to withdraw and transfer that to and transport that to a different location. You know, if there was a severe shortage and you had people running out of for their homes and heating. I'm just curious if we add all this storage, especially with large tanks, and there was some sort of a localized emergency, would there be availability of transporting from some of those large tanks that were used for drying, you know, et cetera, if the Representative Anderson could maybe talk on that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Quam. Yes, that is being done, at least in some areas. Back in my hometown, there's a business that's on standby. They're on natural gas, and they have a 40,000-gallon propane tank for standby. And our co-op is able to utilize those gallons if they need to. The propane in that tank belongs to the co-op, but the company... It's the company's tank, but the co-op can pull gallons out of there if they need them. And you really would have to get a tank large enough to be able to utilize enough size, but yes, that is being done.
Representative Quam, follow-up?
I want to thank Madam Chair for the answer to that, because when you're with the road conditions, transporting was tough to get some of the regions. So I like this bill even more with that. And then to the Madam Chair and the members on the Tax Committee, if you can maybe hint that there's less overhead cost if you don't collect the money, you don't have to go through a process of redistributing it. So maybe it's a little more efficient if we did the exemption, like in the bill, instead of paying people to collect it, paying people to administer and redistribute it. So I think maybe you could convince the Chair about this.
I think we passed the upfront exemption last year, so I think we agree with you on that. Anybody in the audience like to testify in favor of or opposed to the bill? Well, thank you, Representative Anderson. I think it's a good topic for us to be talking about and thinking about, and I'm sure Representative Garofalo will be offering it as an amendment in Tax Committee to some tax bill that comes flying by.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Our next bill on the calendar is Representative McNamer's bill, House File 2210. And we do have this bill, but we are hearing it informationally. I didn't want people to have to make up their mind before they came in. And we'll see if we get some input from the Attorney General's office and the Department of Commerce if we decide to go forward with something like this later in the session. But we want to do an informational hearing to start talking about this very important topic. Representative McNamer, your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for allowing me to be here today in an informational only look at my bill. In January of this year, I noticed the price of propane was starting to escalate. I contacted West Central Community Action in Elbow Lake to check on the money available for heating assistance. West Central Community Action handles a heating assistance program for most of my rural district. My district is rural, and there's a picture of it right down there. And propane is one of the main fuels used for heating. I was informed the price of propane was going up at the rate of 60 to 65 cents per day. We watched the prices go from $1.50 per gallon to $2, $3, $4, $5, and the highest we saw was $6.75 a gallon. I called constituent services for help looking for funds for heating assistance because funds for heating assistance was running out. That evening, of the same day I made the call, I was informed that our state had a severe shortage of propane and that there would be some action taken to address the crisis. A day or two later, Governor Dayton declared a statewide peacetime propane emergency. I anticipated that the state would address the issues, and they did. It increased funding from the federal government for heating assistance. It increased the amount of money that you could earn to qualify for heating assistance. And it increased the amount of money that would be given for heating assistance from $500 to $1,000. The rapid increase in the price of propane was not addressed. In my district, I've heard talks of price gouging and conspiracies to escalate the price of propane. And this started me to look at what would be considered price gouging. And what I found that would pertain to our propane emergency in Minnesota is this. Price gouging can occur when prices sharply rise in anticipation of or during a civil emergency like we had. An example, when a retailer increases the price of existing stocks when an emergency is imminent or occurring. And another example or form of price gouging is can occur when a retailer cancels or dishonors contracts in order to take advantage of increased prices in related to the emergency. I truly hope this did not occur. My bill, House File 2210, simply states this, that during a state of energy emergency, no wholesaler or retailer may increase the price of propane by an unconscionable amount. A large amount. An unconscionable amount or a large amount can be determined when the rate charged for propane is not reasonably proportional to the change in the wholesale cost of propane. And my bill then asks the Attorney General to investigate all violations. My bill is not the answer. The main reason I'm here today is to ask the Energy Committee to develop a policy or have someone else develop a policy that would address possible price gouging during an energy emergency. That could quell rumors. That could dispel people from being angry. That could stop phone calls to my house. I have four main points I feel should be addressed. Number one, what constitutes price gouging? I could do it myself. A committee would do much better than I. Number two, what limits should be implemented to prevent price gouging? And I've looked around, and I've looked at other states, and other states that generally have laws pertaining to price gouging are ones that are involved in hurricanes. It affects the whole state. That's something a committee could address and look at. Number three, how do we enforce regulations against price gouging? And number four, what, if any, penalties should be assessed for price gouging? Will this situation occur again? It certainly could. It could occur next year. With a policy in place, it could prevent price gouging and it also could dispel rumors of price gouging. We know, well, not that I know of, we do not have a price gouging in the state of Minnesota. I don't think we've ever had a statewide emergency like we had this year. Questions?
Questions from members for Representative Anderson. I'm sorry, Representative McNamer. I need a more coffee. Any questions from members? If not, anybody in the audience wish to testify in favor of or opposed to the bill? Or offer us any thoughts on these four questions? If not, I think we really appreciate that you raised the question. The committee is looking at the issue of what we should do to protect consumers and to assist the industry on an ongoing basis. I think we've definitely heard that the propane industry has done a great job of reaching out to people in need, and we've definitely, in the crisis, heard more stories of good things happening than bad things. But we'll be taking a look at whether there's anything we can do on the consumer protection side that would make sure something like price gouging couldn't happen in Minnesota.
Madam Chair, if you could address my questions, I could drop my bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative McNamer. With that, Representative Morgan, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I absolutely have, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move the minutes of yesterday's meeting.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes from March 3rd, 2014. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted, and we're adjourned.